Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, giving the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank with no VIG or sportsbook fees. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Create an account and use code PGF for $10 on your first order. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football, where we drink beer and talk football. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? Season 4 continues with NFL draft coverage. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is still the official beer of Pint Glass Football. We're excited to have them on board again for Season 4 and excited about today's show because I have a great in-depth interview with Oliver Hodgkinson of Pro Football Network. And we do a deep dive into this NFL draft class. We take a look at a lot of different players, but I think you'll be surprised who Oliver has as his top-ranked cornerback and running back. You're also going to want to hear who he thinks could be overrated in the first round as well. We have a ton to get to, a great episode with a ton to cover, so I hope you guys enjoy. Excited to be joined by Oliver Hodgkinson, who's a NFL draft analyst for ProFootballNetwork.com and a host of the College Football Chaps podcast. Oliver, thanks for coming on the show.
Really appreciate you having me on. Looking forward to talking some NFL draft with you.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We do a lot of draft coverage on the podcast here. It's one of my favorite things in the world. Two of my favorite sports coming together, college football and the NFL. It's so much fun to look at these players, break it down, and having great guests like yourselves who cover the NFL draft so closely, it's always a lot of fun to talk draft with someone like yourself. So excited to jump in here. I'm going to start, Oliver, with which prospect in this draft do you feel like you're higher on than most other draft analysts?
So there's a few guys that I think to start off with in the process where I certainly had ranked significantly higher than the national consensus at the time. I look at Andrew Booth Jr., the cornerback out of Clemson, who for me still I rate as the best cornerback in this class. And I know there's a few people that share that opinion, but there's also a real diverse opinion on Andrew Booth. There's, you know, some NFL draft analysts have him down as a third round prospect at the moment. So I think he's a guy that I feel like I'm slightly higher on, but there's also guys who share that opinion. Same for Georgia safety Lewis Seen, who is a guy that we've been talking about at Pro Football Network since September, and now it feels really much like after his NFL combine performance, the national consensus is catching up with Lewis Seen, and the same for Boston College guard Zion Johnson. But I think a guy that I'm still consistently higher and significantly higher on than the national consensus is San Diego State defensive end prospect Cameron Thomas, who for me, I've got him as the 33rd overall prospect on my big board. I know there's NFL draft analysts who have him nowhere near that sphere, seeing more as a late day two, maybe even early day three guy. But for me, when you look at Cameron Thomas's tape, you talk about analyzing draft prospects and getting caught up in the highlight moments. For me, when you turn on the tape for Cameron Thomas, every single play is a highlight. Like, you don't have to go and try and find those highlight plays for Cameron Thomas, because it feels like every single time he steps foot on the football field, it's a highlight play. Powerful, versatile defensive lineman who's played all across the defensive front for San Diego State. Good size, 6'4", 264 pound. Good length, 33 1/8 inch arms. So with that size comes a lot of power. With the length comes the ability to disrupt and disengage at the point of attack, and also with his ability to sort of clog passing lanes with that length as well. I know there's a couple of plays on his San Diego State tape where you can watch him physically push an offensive lineman back with one arm while getting his other arm up and getting in the way of the passing lane to disrupt the quarterback that way. So incredibly disruptive, incredibly powerful. Comes loaded for me with an impressive pass rush toolbox. You see bull rushes, swim moves, swipe, rip moves. There's a lot to love about Cameron Thomas from my perspective. And I think you look at his pre-draft process, I think he's a guy that if he'd been able to go out on the field all 3 days of practice at the Senior Bowl, if he'd been able to test at the combine, I think more people would be talking about him nationally. Lost a lot of opportunity in this process to really elevate his draft stock. But for me, when you turn on the tape for Cameron Thomas, he's a guy who's going to be a disruptive 4-3 defensive end. I look at a team like the Kansas City Chiefs at the back end of the first round, who almost feel like an ideal landing spot for a player of his size, power, what they like to do out of the defensive end position. So I think if I look at all the prospects that I've got slightly higher than the national consensus, he's the guy that stands out to me.
I really love that take, Oliver. And we had Natalie Miller from USA Today's Draft Wire on last week. And that was a name that she brought up, was Cam Thomas, a guy that she was really high on as well. I love your take on him. I really like what you're saying about him, a disruptive player, a powerful player, really good at the point of attack. I also like his game. I think he's a guy that's going to translate at the next level. Your take on Andrew Booth Jr. is fascinating as well. You're right. There's a lot of guys that kind of have him in that third, fourth, or even fifth cornerback in this class. But I think from a talent standpoint, he's easily in the discussion with those top players that are being named at the top of this draft. I think maybe the medical concerns could be sliding him down some draft boards, but a heck of a player who I think could have a heck of a career as well. Zion Johnson, you mentioned, he's one of my guys as well that I'm really high on. I just think he's one of the best interior offensive linemen in this class. I think he's a plug-and-play starter day one. So love some of those names that you dropped there. And speaking of some guys that might be in the mid to later round prospects, who are some guys that you really like in that group that you think could be big time impact players for their teams?
Yeah, this is you make a great point about the injury status with Andrew Booth as well. That surely hasn't helped. Two different injuries during the pre-draft process, and obviously the surgery as well. I saw some guys saying that they feel like Andrew Booth isn't a physical corner either, which I think when you turn on the tape, that just doesn't all add up to me. But yeah, coming back to the mid to late round, this is for me the joy of this 2022 NFL draft class is there is so much mid to late round talent. You know, it's had its knocks because of the quarterback position, and I think we're going to talk about that in a little while. It's had its knocks because people say there's not an elite or a large number of elite prospects at the top of the class. And I think there's a great number of top-end talent, but this middle range of the draft is where the money of this draft is to be made, I really feel like. And I must admit, when you send me the questions over, I struggle to narrow it down for this segment because there's so many guys that I love in this range that I think can go on to be, if not day one starters, certainly long-term impact makers at the NFL level. And I look at a guy like Pierre Strong Jr., the running back out of South Dakota State, obviously set the fastest time of all running backs at the NFL Combine, but you don't need to know that statistic, that testing measurement, because you put his tape on and you can see the speed right there. And it's not just speed. He's shifty in his movements, got great footwork, quick footwork that allows him to change direction incredibly well. He's explosive. But for a guy whose game features a lot of the speed elements, he's also physical as well. There's a lot of physicality elements in terms of South Dakota State have used him as a lead blocker. He shows the ability to use a stiff arm. He grinds out yardage particularly well with his lower body strength. He's a natural pass catcher as well. And the stuff that he does so well as a running back translates to yards after the catch value as well for Pierre Strong. And it's funny when you look back at FCS running backs and you look at how the NFL allowed James Robinson to slip out of the draft and they allowed Austin Ekeler to slip out of the draft. There is no way in hell for me that the NFL is going to allow a guy like Pierre Strong to fall out of the draft. Very solid, day, early day three, even late day two potential for me where Pierre Strong's concerned. So he's a running back I really, really like. Couple of cornerbacks that I think one of which is starting to gain more attention, but Alabama's Jalen Armour-Davis, 6'1", 192 pounds, so he's good size for the position at the NFL level. Got impressive relative length, speed. We talked about Pierre Strong's speed. Jalen Armour-Davis, a former track star, former 100-meter state champion, 100-meter runner. So his speed is great, very fluid, excellent footwork again. I think he showcases great football intelligence. So, you know, you with the athletic profile, you can play him in man, but he's also got the intelligence to understand zone concepts. So with him and Sam Houston State cornerback Zion McCollum, who a highly productive FCS corner, 13 career interceptions, a phenomenal athlete who showcased that at the NFL Combine, but also it's all over his Sam Houston State tape. His ability to click and close, his nose for the ball, and then he's got great disruptive tendencies as a cornerback, puts his length to great use. In terms of disruption at the catch point. And again, another physical cornerback, which I think, you know, the more the NFL you want to see, you want to see cornerbacks who can be disruptive in the run game as well as in the passing game and who can come and be physical. And I think Zion McCollum has really shown that in his Sam Houston State tape. I think there's every reason to believe that he can bring that to the NFL level. It would be remiss of me to allow an appearance on any show to go by without talking about my guy Jeffrey Gunter out of Coastal Carolina, a versatile defensive line prospect who I think the NFL will probably consider a little undersized to play defensive end. He's played defensive end, outside linebacker. He's been a terror in the interior of the defense as well for Coastal Carolina. 6'4", 3'8", and 3'8", 258 pounds. Got long arms, 30-inch arms. He's strong. Showcased that with the 30 bench reps at the NFL Combine. Incredible athlete. Has been from his high school career, and he's taken that into his Coastal Carolina career. Powerful at the point of attack. Uses his length well to be disruptive. Special teams player as well. And I think when you talk about these guys in this mid to late day range area, that is super important, that special teams, because that's going to allow them to be able to contribute early on and be able to get their foot in the door of the NFL. And Jeffrey Gunter, he was one of the guys where I was kind of thinking about talking about as a guy I'm higher on than the national consensus, because for me, I don't see any reason why he couldn't go very early on day three as a round four prospect. And you don't get a lot of that hype from a great deal of national media where Jeffrey Gunter's concerned. So he's a guy I really love. Some other guys like Devontae Price, the running back out of FIU, Samori Toure, the wide receiver out of Nebraska, John Ridgeway, this defensive line class, this interior defensive class, is lacking a large number of true nose tackles. You know, Jordan Davis and Travis Jones are the highlight names at Georgia and UConn respectively, but John Ridgeway out of Arkansas is a guy who's pushing 6'5", over 325 pounds, extremely long, physical, powerful, violent hands. The upper body strength, you can see his ability to push the pocket, but he's also got some technical nuance with his pass rush moves, and that length really helps him to disengage from blockers. A high motor guy who also got some decent lateral agility and athletic capability. So there's just a few guys who I kind of look at in that mid to late round range who I think can come in and make not necessarily an immediate impact, but a long-term impact in the NFL.
Absolutely love it. And you are right about this class. The depth of this class is really impressive. I think a lot of it has to do with the COVID year and a lot of college guys going back to school kind of created a logjam of talent this year, unlike any we've ever seen, because you're right. There's going to be a ton of guys with a ton of value, second round graded guys that are going to go in the third round graded guys in the fourth, and so forth. There's going to be a ton of talent to be had, a lot of guys that can make an impact in this draft. You hit on some really good names. P. Pierre Strong Jr. is a guy I really like as well. Small school player, a little under the radar because of that, but a very complete running back. I think he's a guy that could be an impact player. I loved your take on Alabama cornerback Jalen Armour-Davis as well. This is a deep class at cornerback. I think maybe not enough people are talking about the quality of the cornerbacks in this class. There's definitely those names at the top that people are focused on. But after that, there's some really high-level players in this group. Jeffrey Gunter that you talked about, I like him as well. 6'4", long arms, 4'7", 40-yard dash. He's got good speed, athleticism. I loved your takes here. It was a lot of fun to jump into those mid-round guys. So PGF Nation, get your pen and paper out. Make sure you write some of these names down so you're ready for draft day. Now, you touched on it a little bit earlier, the quarterback class. A lot has been made about this year's quarterback group. It's being viewed as a down year for the position. But with that being said, we know how important the position is. So will any team draft a quarterback in the top 10, in your opinion, this year? Do you think that will happen?
I'd be surprised if they don't, just because, like you mentioned there, the quarterback position, it is so important. And I think there's so many teams whose quarterback situation is, even in spite of some of the free agency moves and some of the guys that have been picked up over the last couple of months, I still think there's so many teams where the quarterback situation just isn't set enough to rule out taking a quarterback in this class. And I think if you look at the top 10 as it stands now, you wouldn't rule necessarily the Detroit Lions out of taking a quarterback if they love one enough at two. And I was on a Detroit Lions show here in the UK yesterday, and we were talking through that process for the Detroit Lions, because there's two ways of looking at it. The Lions almost definitely need to get the maximum out of all of their picks in this draft class because they have got a lot of holes. But do they feel like under Dan Campbell, with his the tone that he sets, with the way he goes about his setting that organization up, do they honestly believe that the Detroit Lions will be in this same situation next year in terms of picking as high as they are? And if you don't believe that, if you don't believe you're going to be in a position to get a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud or a, you know, even a guy like Phil Jakovich, or, you know, someone will come out of the blue out of the draft class, like a Jaron Hall from BYU, for example, just as an example. If you don't believe you're going to be in a position to take one of those guys next year, surely it makes sense to put yourself in a position to get your long-term quarterback if you believe that there is a guy in this class that is that guy. So for the Lions, they spent a lot of time around Malik Willis at the Senior Bowl and reportedly absolutely loved what they saw from him in terms of the obvious things with Malik Willis, you know, the arm strength, the creative mobility, but also the off-the-field stuff in terms of the personality that he is, very humble, very leadership-driven guy. I had the opportunity to speak to Malik while he was at Liberty, and his leadership just stands out every time you speak to him. That's just the kind of guy that he is, very humble and a leader of men. And it sounds like he showcased to the Lions during Senior Bowl practice that he can take on board coaching and work through some of the elements that have blighted his scouting report as an NFL draft prospect. Because same with a lot of these guys, there's plenty to love, but there's plenty to work on as well. And that's what makes this quarterback class so murky. So you look at the Detroit Lions, they could even be in play for a quarterback. You look at the Carolina Panthers at 6, who have to do something. They have to. Matt Rhule, what a good friend of mine, Thor Nystrom out of NBC Sports Edge, he was on our College Chaps podcast, and he used the phrase "desperation is a stinky cologne," which I thought was perfect to describe the Carolina Panthers situation, because Matt Rhule is in a desperate situation. They have to be better this year. They've got so much to do to make that situation better. Quarterback, ideally at 6, they'd take an offensive tackle like a Charles Cross. But who do you play behind him at this moment in time? They're paying Sam Darnold, who hasn't been, you know, he not only are they paying for his wages, they're paying with the capital that they gave up to get him. You know, they may be in the market for Baker Mayfield. They've got the situation there is diabolical, and you kind of feel like they might have to take a quarterback just to try and save Matt Rhule, for Matt Rhule to try and save his own career there. So you've got the Lions, you've got the Panthers. it's not out of the world that the Seattle Seahawks take a quarterback at 9. The Atlanta Falcons, have they enamored enough to take a guy at 8? Would the Pittsburgh Steelers trade up from 20? Would the New Orleans Saints, did they get those two first-round picks to package them and come up for a quarterback? There's so many teams that need a quarterback that this is one of the fascinating elements of this draft class is we don't really know how it's all going to fall into play because of the teams that need quarterbacks in a class that is really not up to the, you know, it'll never live up to the standard of last year, for example, which was just obviously historic. But I think if quarterbacks go, I think they probably do go early. I think you see maybe even 2 in that first 10 picks. And if you don't, you may not see any till later on in the first round.
Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank. BetterEdge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the position, the importance of the position, I don't think any of these guys are worthy of a top 10 pick. I think it is a down class. I think they all have warts, so to speak. But at the same time, like you hit on, that position is just so important, and there are some teams that are in situations where they desperately need a quarterback and are probably going to reach on some of these guys. I thought it was interesting what you said about Malik Willis for the Lions. I don't think enough people are talking about that as a realistic possibility. I think I've only seen one mock draft recently that actually projected Malik Willis at number 2, but I think it's becoming more and more likely that could play out. And I actually think it's a good landing spot because here's a guy in Jared Goff at the quarterback position for them who could really be a good bridge quarterback for them and let Malik Willis develop under him for a year and maybe come in year 2 and be a little more prepared for the NFL game. We know he has some developing to do, so I really like that scenario for him. Some of the other names that you mentioned was the Panthers. At that point, you're looking at a guy like maybe a Kenny Pickett or a Desmond Ridder possibly. There's a kind of a wide range of opinions on who the next quarterback would be. I think it's a bad situation to be in for the Panthers because you're right. They are certainly – that seat for Matt Rhule is heating up. They are almost in a win now or at least show improvement now situation. I think the owner – is starting to lose patience with that situation. And Seattle was another team that I thought was interesting you mentioned because after losing Russell Wilson, they suddenly are in a desperate situation as well. And they've just got such a bad roster. This is a team that I would not be the least bit surprised is picking number 1 overall next year unless they do something drastic at the quarterback position as well. So I thought those were all great points by you, Oliver.
Yeah, you make a great point about the Detroit Lions as well. Yeah, Jared Goff is a serviceable quarterback for the Detroit Lions for this year to allow Malik Willis that time. Another great element, and I mentioned this yesterday with some Detroit Lions fans, they have got the ideal situation for a young quarterback in terms of the offensive line. They went out and got Penei Sewell last year. They've got a relatively settled offensive line in Detroit. And if you're going to bring in a rookie quarterback, we saw it with Trevor Lawrence at the Jacksonville Jaguars last year. His rookie year was essentially a garbage year just because they couldn't protect him. I think you look at what the Lions are in a position to do is to have that line in place ready for a rookie quarterback to go in, not this year in 2023, and not face some of those early difficulties that we've seen quarterbacks through the years. You know, you look back at David Carr at Houston all those years ago where you send in a rookie quarterback behind a terrible offensive line and it basically just ruins their career. At least with the Lions as a landing spot, you know you've got a solid offensive line to step straight into, whether it be the back end of this season, the start of next season.
Yeah, that's a great point as well. The Lions roster does have a lot of holes, but offensive line is not one of them. You're certainly right about that. They have a very good O-line that they could put in front of a young quarterback, and I do think that makes even more sense. Is what you're saying there for sure. I want to shift here to which projected first-round prospects are most likely, in your opinion, to slide in this draft and get picked later than most expected. It seems like every year there's always a couple guys that everyone's circling as a first-round pick, and all of a sudden they slide into that second round. Who are some guys that you think that could possibly happen to this year?
two guys who have been solidly within that first round conversation throughout the process, but could definitely slip out. I look at Iowa center Tyler Linderbaum, who for me, you see what happened with Creed Humphrey last year. You see how the NFL sometimes undervalues the center position. Creed Humphrey had got no business being allowed out of the first round last year, and he did. I could see a situation where Tyler Linderbaum, a guy who a lot of people feel is very scheme-specific at the next level, slightly undersized by NFL interior offensive line standards. So you could see a definitely a fall out of the first round potentially for him. Treylon Burks, who almost become like a fantasy wide receiver darling. A lot of fantasy experts really high on Treylon Burks because he has got that versatile skill set where he can be the big-bodied boundary pass catcher, but he can also carry the ball out of the backfield, take short dump-offs the distance with that physical long build speed approach that he has to the game. But I think some of the testing times, particularly the 40-yard dash time, is certainly coming around to haunt Treylon Burks in this process. I know speaking with guys, Tony Pauline at Pro Football Network spoke about during the offseason, Treylon Burks not looking anywhere near as polished a route runner as some of the guys that he was working with during the pre-draft process. So maybe the demand for wide receivers may see Treylon Burks still sneak into the back end of the first round, but it wouldn't be a surprise if he was to fall out of the first round at the same time.
Yeah, I think those are some great names. And Tyler Linderbaum is a guy that I think the NFL would be doing a disservice if he slid out of the first round. I think it's definitely a possibility, like you touched on, because of some of the measurables that he showed at the combine, the shorter arms, slightly undersized, like you spoke about. And some teams are going to ding him for that. And I think it's going to end up being a mistake because I think this is a guy who's a really, really polished, ready-to-play prospect at the center position. I think he's a guy that comes in and instantly makes a big-time impact at that position. Treylon Burks is another interesting name because he was a guy that a lot of people had a lot of hype, so to speak, coming into this process and has certainly cooled off after the combine and some of his numbers being a little bit disappointing, like you touched on as well. There's a lot of wide receivers in this class, a lot of talented guys. Maybe he's a guy that slides as well. So those are fascinating names, but I think both of them could be great value if they did slide into the second as well. Which projected top 10 type of player, in your opinion, is being overhyped?
I look at this and I think one name immediately stands out. And I know some analysts, some scouts had got this guy as potentially the best offensive tackle in the class. But for me, Trevor Penning is a guy that I understand the size. I understand the physicality that he brings to the game. But there's a lot of things with Trevor Penning's game that he's going to struggle with translating to the NFL level. And if he doesn't clean up that stuff, is really going to be a guy that ends up being ultimately overdrafted. Anchor isn't always solid in pass protection. He takes too long to anchor. You saw it during Senior Bowl practices. Sometimes the desire to play with this overwhelming physicality means that he causes problems for his own teammates, for his own quarterback, for his own running back. He doesn't always anchor solidly. Feet are inconsistent. Hand timing and hand placement aren't always consistent. Naturally, because of his height, he plays with quite a high pad level. And obviously in the battle in the trenches, you want to be the low man wins. And you talked about Tyler Linderbaum. He's a guy who excels in that leverage battle in the trenches because he can play with great low pad level and get up and under his opponent. And he knows how to win with leverage. So some of the strength issues that and size issues that Tyler Linderbaum has are negated by that. Well, with Trevor Penning, he doesn't negate any of his height issues. He plays with a high pad level. And you compare him to a guy like Evan Neal out of Alabama, who is 6'7" the best part of, and he's still able to play with a consistently low pad level. And when you start looking into the nuances of the offensive tackle position, little things like that with Trevor Penning's game really show up. And I kind of feel like he is being vastly overrated just based on the sheer size. He's got some clear athletic capability. and the physicality, that savage nature which he plays the game and which you want to see out of an offensive tackle prospect. But he sometimes, he, you know, we saw the senior ball, he crosses over the line with that. And I think the potential is to look at the stuff that he does well and ignore the flaws that come with his game. For me, I'd be loath to use even a middling first round pick on Trevor Penning at this stage, and potentially it wouldn't be a, if it was me, if I was the GM of 32 NFL teams, I don't think Trevor Penning would end up in the first round at all.
Yeah, that's interesting because he is a guy that most people definitely view as a first-round pick. There's kind of a wide range of opinions on him. I've seen people rank him very high. I've seen people have him a little bit further back in their tackle rankings. I get what you're saying completely, though. I love his demeanor. I love his style of play, kind of that mauler type of attitude that he plays with. But he does need to improve on some of those technical parts of the game. That's certainly a glaring flaw in his game. Some of the things you spoke about, he needs to clean up some of those things. Hopefully with coaching, those parts of his game can continue to develop and he can become a really high-level player. I think the talent is certainly there, but you're right. That's definitely some red flags in his game from a technical standpoint, and I agree with you completely. If you were an NFL GM, who is a guy that you'd be pounding the table for in this draft, a guy that you would say, hey, we got to go get him?
And this is a great question because it's difficult because there are so many guys that I absolutely love in this class. But Lewis Cine, the safety out of Georgia, is for me a guy who is going to make a huge difference to whichever NFL team he lands on. And a guy that was kind of vilified in the 2020 season because of the heavy hits that he laid on Kyle Pitts. And there was another one in the Tennessee game as well. And he was vilified, and people said, "Oh, Lewis Cine's just a dirty, nasty player." Well, you watch Lewis Cine play the game of football. He hits hard. He hits very, very hard. He's an extremely physical player. But there's not it's not out of control aggression. It's controlled aggression. He's a heavy hitter, very physical. Great size for the safety position, but there's so much more to his game, and he showed some of the athletic ability which is clearly apparent on tape, showed that out at the NFL combine by testing incredibly well. But for me, I absolutely love the football intelligence that you see out of Lewis Cine. I think I wrote in his scouting report his nickname should be Diagnose and Destroy, because you watch him at work, especially against the run game. He diagnoses and sees the game of football at such a high level, and then he's got the athletic capability to act upon that. You see it with him coming downhill against the run. You see it in coverage as well. You see it, he wasn't tasked with relaying the plays at Georgia. That was obviously N'Kobe Dean's responsibility as a middle linebacker. But you can see him directing his teammates as well. He's got that command of a locker room. He's got that football intelligence to be able to see the game and be able to tell his teammates where they need to be and what they need to be doing whilst also being on top of his own assignments. And I look at Lewis Cine's game and there's not a ton of flaws in there. If you're an NFL defense that needs to get better, I don't think you can go much wrong with plugging a guy like Lewis Cine into your secondary, because I think he changes your defense on all three phases of defense. I just think that's it. That's the guy that I'd want in my locker room.
Yeah, I love Lewis Cine as well. 4.3 speed. He's got elite speed, aggressive, downhill player that gets after it. And I also think he's a little underrated in man coverage. I don't think he gets enough credit for what he can do, especially underneath. Just a really good player. So I like that take a lot, and I think he is going to be a fantastic fit for somebody. Excited to see what he does at the next level. I want to shift to the offense here. The running backs in this draft aren't viewed as first-round talent, although there are some nice, solid prospects in this draft, such as Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker. Could you see either one of them possibly going in the first round, maybe to a team like the Bills that have a need at the position?
Really difficult one with the running backs, because the guys you mentioned, Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker, are incredibly talented. For me, Isaiah Spiller, despite the testing time in terms of his 40-yard dash time, Isaiah Spiller is still my number one ranked running back because of the things that he brings to the football field, his footwork, his vision, his ability to be a three-down back in the NFL, pass protection, running, receiving running back as well, plays the game with physicality. But it very much feels like Breece Hall and Kenneth Walker are now the two guys where the NFL are concerned, because they've got that explosive creativity. They've both tested well with the speed. I don't think either are considered potentially round one running back prospects. Certainly on my board, the running back start at sort of 38, 39, 40. I've got those three guys very close together. But Breece Hall, there is a lot of chatter about him creeping into the back end of the first round. And we're not looking at like a Najee Harris situation like last year, where Najee was a nailed-on guarantee. It kind of felt for the longest part of that draft, pre-draft cycle, that Najee Harris to the Pittsburgh Steelers was kind of almost a signed, sealed, delivered, I'm yours kind of deal. And then Travis Etienne obviously snuck into the back end of the first round as well. And that felt like more of a surprise, but less surprising than, say, one of Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker going in the first round. But you mentioned the Bills. Great team in terms of running back need. I also look at the Bucs in that late first round range. And the Bills, I think for me, the running back position has been something that's been derided. Devin Singletary, Zach Moss haven't had the success necessarily that they thought they would get. And sure, they're a part of that. But also the interior offensive line has not allowed those two guys to go to work. And I know they added some pieces there in the offseason. I still feel like there's bigger needs for the Bills than adding a running back in round one, when you could get, probably you could still get one of these guys, maybe an Isaiah Spiller, or even looking towards sort of round three, four, guys like, you know, we talked about Pierre Strong earlier, Rashad White, who for me is my fourth ranked running back in this class. I think if he's available in round three, that's a guy you could pick up, and you wouldn't have used a first round pick on a running back. The Bucs, obviously, they've got Leonard Fournette coming back, but between him and Giovanni Bernard and Keyshawn Vaughn and Kenyon Barner, that's a running back room that it would be a surprise to me if they don't address the running back situation either, potentially as early as round two. Again, they're a team with other needs as well. But if you were looking at a running back round one landing spot, I think it's one of those two teams. It'd be Buffalo or Tampa Bay. But I think at this moment in time, it would feel like a reach to me when there's potentially, it obviously depends how the board falls and it depends who's on the board at that time. But I think round one is probably a reach for a running back in this class.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I like some of these guys. I also like Isaiah Spiller, a guy that you mentioned. His draft stock seems to be on the rise. It seems like he's starting to get a little more buzz as we get closer to the NFL draft. But I'm with you. I think this class just doesn't have any clear-cut first-round talent guys, and I do think it would be a little bit of a reach, even though those teams you mentioned, I think, could really use an upgrade at the position. I do think it'd be a little bit of a reach going after one of those guys. I think it could be the first time, I believe since 2014, that we're going to have a first round without a running back selected. So it's an interesting class in that regard, but I do think some of those guys that are going to fall into the second, third round, I do think there's some nice value at that point in the draft. So that'll be interesting to see how it shakes out there. Oliver, unlike last year, there isn't a consensus number one no-brainer type of pick like we had with Trevor Lawrence. Most analysts think it will be Aiden Hutchinson going number one, but there's a wide range of opinions on the top players in this class. So I'll ask you, who's the best player in this draft?
Aiden Hutchinson for me is particularly interesting, and I almost was tempted to put Aiden Hutchinson as a guy who is overhyped as a top 10 pick, and that's going to upset a lot of people. But you're looking at a guy who wasn't considered a first round prospect coming into this year. He's a guy who was statistically fantastic. There's no doubt in that. You know, you look at 16 and a half tackles for loss, 14 sacks. You look at the power, the motor, the violent, combative hands, the explosive first steps. But he's far from this perfect, untouchable first overall pick that I think a lot of people feel like Aiden Hutchinson is. Will he go first overall? It's possible. We've heard the talk about Trayvon Walker potentially going first overall. Kayvon Thibodeau, for me, is the best pass rusher in this class. And if the Jags wanted to address pass rusher at first overall, that, for me, would be the better pick in terms of the better player at that position. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars, for me, I think they're out of their mind if they don't take Evan Neal to protect Trevor Lawrence. And you still pick up a pass rusher at 33 when they pick in the second round. There's going to be guys. You know, we talked about Cameron Thomas at the top of the show. Boye Mafe, Arnold Ebiketie, Cameron Thomas, Sam Williams out of Ole Miss. There's a lot of pass rush talent that you can get in that early second round range. You can't get a guy like Evan Neal at number one overall. But for me, the best overall player in the class is still Kyle Hamilton, the safety out of Notre Dame. I know a lot of people have banged on him because of the slow 40-yard dash time. But I think when you look at what Kyle Hamilton is, he's a 6'4", 220-pound safety who hits like a linebacker, covers like a cornerback. In a lot of examples, he's got the football intelligence, he's got the ball skills, he's got the sideline-to-sideline range. Comes down and hit you in the mouth in the ground game. Incredible physicality. Tackles well. Goes up and gets the ball at the highest point as well in coverage. Everything that you want to see out of the safety position, Kyle Hamilton has and more. I was talking about this earlier on on another show where Kyle Hamilton almost blurs the lines between a safety and a linebacker with that size, physicality, the athletic ability that he's got, the football intelligence, clear leader of the Notre Dame secondary. I think there's so much to love about Kyle Hamilton. For me, I think he is the top prospect in this class. And the 40-yard dash time was not great, but I don't think that's a huge part of his game in terms of there's other aspects of athleticism other than just being able to run in a straight line real fast. And I think Kyle Hamilton possesses the rest of those attributes. He won't obviously go first overall. He could even drop down. I see probably a floor of the Washington Commanders at pick 11. I think if he was to fall that far, I think the Washington Commanders would scoop up Kyle Hamilton and be extremely happy about it. And we know that the safety position, that positional value is kind of undermined by the NFL level. I think Kyle Hamilton for me is the top player in the class, but I think, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, Trayvon Walker, Kayvon Thibodeau, I think they're probably the guys that you're looking at as the first overall pick for the Jaguars.
Man, I think that's such a great take, Oliver, because I'm totally with you. The people that listen to this show know how high I am on Kyle Hamilton. He's also my number one ranked player in this class. I just think for everything that you just said, I couldn't agree more. Just such an incredible talent, such a good player. The 40 time doesn't even bother me because he plays fast. When you watch his tape, he has so much range. He covers so much ground. And he's, like you said, he's such an intelligent player, always puts himself in the right position. There's really just no holes in this guy's game. And that's what really stands out to me the most, is that he's such a good player and such a complete player at that position. I do think you're right, though. The safety position seems to be a little bit undervalued, so to speak, in the NFL. And because of that, he's probably going to slide way past where he should in this draft. I think it's interesting what you said about Aiden Hutchinson, because he's a guy that I think is a very solid prospect. But you hit on something that I think is really interesting. He was not a first-round pick. Is at least projected to be a first-round pick coming into the year. A guy that really kind of excelled his last year at Michigan, climbed those draft boards, and I think he is getting maybe a little overrated because of that. I don't see a Myles Garrett, a Chase Young, or a Bosa brother type of talent in Aiden Hutchinson. Not that he's a bad player, but I just don't see that level of player. So for me, it's a little bit of a questionable first overall pick if he ends up being that guy. And I'm with you. I actually like Kayvon Thibodeau more than Aiden Hutchinson. I'm a little surprised at some of the mock drafts and some of the analysts kind of sliding him down the board. But it's always fascinating. I think this class has been so fascinating to break down because there's such a wide range of opinions. And I absolutely loved getting your opinions today. Some great stuff. Once again, we've been joined by Oliver Hodgkinson of ProFootballNetwork.com. He covers the NFL draft for those guys, and also check out his podcast, the College Football Chaps podcast. Oliver, thank you so much for your time on the show. Great stuff today.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, Brad. Really enjoyed it. Really appreciate you having me on.
All right, that's it for today's episode. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. I have to apologize, guys, for the audio quality on this episode from my vocals. We had some technical issues. We tried our best to clean it up and get it as best sounding as we could, but it wasn't up to our normal standards, and I do apologize. We felt like the content in the interview was just too good to not post it. Wanted you guys to enjoy it anyway. Hope you guys did. Like I said, sorry it wasn't up to the normal clean audio that we normally have. Sometimes when you're podcasting, you can get some of these tech issues. They come up sometimes. We apologize once again, but I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and I really hope you guys enjoyed the NFL draft. It's going to be so much fun. I'm going to be tweeting and posting things as the draft goes along, interacting with you guys if you want to talk draft during the next couple days here as the picks go live. Going to be an absolute blast to see where all these guys go. And after the draft, of course, we're going to have more coverage, more guests to break down the post-draft coverage and give out our draft grades for each team in the NFL. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot more to come from PGF. So stay tuned, guys. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast. We'll be right back.